What is up, everybody? Thank you so much for tuning into another episode of the Anti-Gravity Group Podcast. My name is Braden Carlson.
My name is Taylor.
I'm Shane, or as you might know me, Posthart.
My name is Matthew, or you may know me as Macho Matt.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Today we're talking about scratch building techniques, and I did manage to make it through the intro without laughing about Taylor not saying his last name. Did you see somebody commented about the tent stakes? They're like, where's the links to Jesse's tent stakes? And I was like, no way you did that after the intro. That had to be on purpose.
That's what's hot right now. Not saying my last name because I'm trying to get the point across, but it's really funny. It just doesn't roll quite the same.
No, saying your... Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, because people choose to say only your last name because they're confused about what your name is.
Yeah, it's all right. If I say my full name, they just don't hear the first part or refuse to believe that that's correct.
It'd be an awesome edit. I'll just like do like the tinnitus ear ringing over your first name. And there's like, Jesse. Before we get into talking about scratch building, I'm happy to announce that unless you're on Patreon... patreon.com/rocketvlogs, that is, or you are a channel member of Rocket Vlogs. Today you are watching this, the public release, on April 29th, which is Posthard's 21st birthday.
Woo!
Let's give him a round of applause.
Happy birthday. Wow, that was very short lived.
Cut that a little short. Thank you.
Uh-oh. There we go.
You're just a little stuck.
But yeah, so if you guys want to give Posthart some birthday beer money, check out rocketrypicks.com. He has some really cool long exposure night shots, and there's like the stars in the background, everything. You can get digital downloads or you can get prints. And honestly, the digital download and getting your own prints if you wanted the poster is kind of the play. Because they're like $10 a download, right?
Yeah.
And then you just go to Staples and get a matted poster for like $22 and hang that up. But yeah, it's Posthart's 21st birthday, ladies and gentlemen. He can finally try alcohol.
Yep, for the first time.
What are you going to do first? What's your first play?
I don't know. Probably just beer.
He's going to do the thing where you take like a bottle and use a straw to vent it so you can chug a whole fifth of Jack Daniels.
What?
Happy birthday.
Wow. You should Edward 40 hands it.
Yeah, nothing like not being able to remember your birthday. That's always fun.
Super cool. Yeah. Super cool.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we're going to dive into some scratch building stuff, and Taylor is kind of going to spearhead this one because he wrote a exceptionally in-depth document about this, and we're all just kind of along for the ride. So this is the Taylor Show, and that's Taylor, not Jesse. That's
Taylor.
And we're part of it.
Well, why is he going by his last name? That's weird. Anyway.
All right. Take the reins, Jesse Taylor.
Well, you know, I do see a lot that people ask what to do, or like, how do you cut this? Or, you know, I don't know. Questions about scratch building, because people know how to buy kits and build them, but not everyone knows that there's a way to scratch build without owning a CNC machine. I mean, you can use your imagination, but
I wish that we had a CNC machine. That guy was like, you guys should really get one if you're going to be doing this.
Yeah.
That was awesome. It's like, yeah, that's sure. That makes sense.
It's in the budget. Anyway, pick up a couple.
Yeah. We have lots of experience doing things the very hard but very cheap way, all the way up to the kind of hard and kind of more expensive way, which is kind of what I'm doing now.
Should we kind of give a rundown on our scratch building experience so far?
Sure.
Just because really I just want to toot my own horn on my flight from this past weekend.
Okay, you can just do that then.
I scratch built a minimum diameter rocket and flew it on a CTI M1675. And actually, if you're on Patreon or you're a channel member, the full video is already up, but it'll be out May 5th, so it'll be the weekend after you see this going live. Again, on Posthart's birthday, that's rocketrypicks.com. but it was kind of the end-all be-all of the JB Weld series, unless the video somehow gets a ton of views and revenue, because I can't afford to just for funsies be throwing minimum diameter end motors around and maybe not having them survive. I was already pushing it too much with this motor case in there, but just 3/16 arcus shaped fins and a G10 tube and a lot of sanding, and we did JB weld fillets, and it went Mach 2.2 ish is what it simmed to.
Wow.
And
wait, what did annoyingly, it, what did it record?
Yeah. oh, I don't know. I didn't. There's no, it's oh. just the stratologers. The GPS doesn't have any velocity data because it locks out when it goes supersonic, which is something I didn't think about until I showed that the max acceleration or max velocity was like 400 miles an hour. I was like, that's for sure wrong. Because it locks out. So, you know. So, but looking at the rocket, I don't think anybody has any doubts that it went really fast. There's the red paint from the nose cone melted and went all the way down, and it made a really cool, like, it's like a visualization of a wind tunnel around the fillets. So you kind of see how the arrow around the fillets works. It's really cool. And, I've been working really hard to get a rocket recovered from 20,000 feet. So I'm happy to report that it went 19,300 feet.
Matt, you need to build a rocket that goes 20,000 feet so you can beat Braden. Everyone has to beat Braden to 20,000 feet.
You know what, though? Okay. It's going to be fine when we go to NSL and your 7680 case gets lost because it just has to. That's how it goes. And then when my 54 rocket goes high and recovers, higher than you've ever flown anything, which it will, then this conversation is going to get real crazy real fast.
A lot of bold claims here.
Really, if that ends up happening, Braden's going to not let me ever forget about it.
This is it right here for the listeners. I'm holding up a CTI.
He's
a tapered rear closure for a 54. If that K300 doesn't blow up, it's going down, dude.
Well, if my 7680 case doesn't end up in the ground, then...
Right. Okay.
I don't think you know how to do that.
I did it my first time I ever tried.
That's true.
It's just the last time I tried, it didn't work. Or the time before that.
I have a bunch of really terrible scratch builds throughout my tenure as a teenage rocket person with Pringles cans and cheap $3 plywood that is like 3-ply and really terrible. So we don't need to dive into that. I just was excited about my M motor flight. The rocket is still around. So somebody else, please talk about your scratch building experience.
Well, me and some dumb people, some dumb friends built a 12-inch... upscale of a Wildman Punisher.
But those guys are idiots.
Yeah, they didn't
they smell bad too.
Yeah.
There's a scratch build rocket behind you, actually.
Oh.
And your other Sumo is also scratch built. Yeah. Oh, this old thing.
It certainly is. But we don't need to talk about that because Braden's just going to bring up how the first flight was on one motor instead of five.
Do you have five motor tubes in there?
Yeah, because I scratch built it.
That's crazy that you wouldn't use them all. All right. Well, anyway, Matt, what do you got?
My very first high power rocket is a scratch built rocket.
The Magnum?
Yeah.
Not the lock Magnum, not the kit.
And it was pretty aggressively scratch built too, although I did walk Matt through it. But do you recall the process, Matt?
Yeah, I remember. So we had the mailing tube and you took two sheets of fiberglass cloth, right? And
we did two layers of glass. Yeah.
Yeah. Two layers of glass. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And we let that dry. And then the fins were plywood. I'm trying to remember how those were mounted. I know I did fillets. I don't think they were through tube. I don't think we made it go through the tube to the mount.
I think we did.
I feel like
I think it had to have.
Yeah, I feel like it might, especially with, cause I don't, oh, it has broke a fin. Yeah, but mostly cardboard. I forget what the motor mount's made out of. I think I must have bought that. And then the nose cone is 3D printed, and it's been through a couple revisions of that too. Now with the
the crowd goes wild.
He got through it.
Oh, thank you, everyone.
Matt is qualified to scratch build rockets.
yeah.
Boss-tart, have you scratch built a rocket?
You know, I gotta say that really, I haven't. Kind of, I guess.
That's
I've modified kits, and I would like to think I have a good grasp of scratch building stuff and like making the components, and quite a few of the projects that I have planned will actually be scratch built. However,
20,000
you brought
feet.
Up the Punisher. I had some other dumb friends, and we did a 2x upscale of an Arcus, and that was scratch built.
That's really dumb.
Wow.
Yeah. Dumb. Would it have like 9 motors? That would be the stupidest thing ever.
Actually, that was a good guess.
Should have just used 2.
Yeah, 2 bit. Yeah, 2 N2000s would have been easy.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
That one thing's for sure, if you're dumb enough to do a 9 motor cluster rocket, there's no shot you'll ever do 9 motors again, because that is just woefully inconvenient.
It was sick, and I would do it again.
Until, we won't do 9 motors again until we decide to ground start 9 J570s.
That will kill it. Oh, but we could do J570s and then air start something in the middle. That's actually kind of sick. An N1000.
Goes like 20,000
feet. Are we really going to use adapters, though? We'd need 4.
That's a good point. Taylor does hate an adapter.
Yeah.
Sheesh. All right. So J570s and K550s.
Oh, sorry, God.
L1090s.
I like how you're just like coming up to the mic and then...
That was quite a jump.
A little bit.
So, scratch building.
Anyway. So, step one of scratch building is figuring out what you want to build, right? So,
draw.
If you're going to... If you're going to scratch build... if you're going to scratch build a rocket, it looks like some people do this. I probably not the best idea to just completely wing it, because it's maybe gonna look goofy.
I shouldn't have this much power.
No,
it's probably gonna look a little goofy if you just wing it on all your dimensions. So maybe use a RockSim or Open Rocket and throw it in there and come up with something that you're happy with, and kind of figure out what materials you're going to use and all that stuff. And it can calculate fin tab depth if you're going through the wall and things like that. So that's a good place to start. And then
you can also print fin templates from RockSim and I believe Open Rocket as well, which goes a long, long way. Especially if it's not just like a simple design.
That's a good point. We have done that. So your first option for a scratch build, which I kind of feel like isn't really scratch building, but we're going to include it because it kind of is.
The gatekeepings.
All right, well, go ahead. The custom kit route, right? You can contact Locke or Wildman or Mac Performance or whoever and work with them to get your design made. And they kind of will just send you the parts. So
yeah, that for sure is not scratch building. I'm with you on that one.
I guess that would, you know how people do the old trope of the scratch built kit when they read the flight card? I guess that would be a scratch built kit.
That should have been in the Rocketry Pet Peeves episode. There's been a pandemic of people saying scratch built kit when they read a flight card. And while I'm on this high horse, hold on for a second. It's going in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, not going on.
Yeah, I don't like that either.
I didn't mean to do it that time. I didn't actually hit the space bar. But it's not.
Oh my God.
It's not. You're going on 0, technically. You're not going on 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Sorry. Anyway, back off the high horse. Now I know that I can use the space bar too. That's awesome.
Hey, we all love a good Brandon rant, you know.
Yeah. People were here for it. They really had a good time with it.
Yeah, so you could go the custom kit route. I'm going to think less of you for it, but it is an option.
I kind of think you're lame a little, but you could.
No, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just going to be more expensive than making everything yourself. Possibly less rewarding, but, you know, what are you going to do? So fins is what we're going to talk about first. I would say where you know most of your decisions from this point is going to be, do you want to use composite fins or plywood fins? Because wood's a lot easier to cut than composites.
And it's a lot cheaper.
That is true.
Well, actually, at this point, it's not a lot cheaper, but yeah, it is still cheaper.
Well, the problem is, so if you buy you definitely have the ability to just buy some like builder grade really crappy plywood that's not real true birch ply, and it will work. Not the best option. You can go to like a hobby store or whatever, or Michael's, and get like a small sheet of light ply for a small high power rocket. I mean, you don't really want to. Does that come in quarter inch? I'm not really sure.
I think it's kind of hard to find. I think Hobby Lobby does have it in quarter inch, but I don't think Michael's.
Usually
think
it's
Michael
eighth
stops
inch,
at eighth.
Like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is an option, and that stuff, well, I guess it's not that cheap anymore.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that too.
You can get 16th inch G10 on Amazon for like $10, $12 a square foot. So that's pretty darn cheap.
Yeah.
Plywood works out well, but to buy a full sheet of Baltic birch, it's a 5x5 sheet.
Yeah, and they're what, like $60 now for quarter inch?
Yeah. But you can make a ton of fins from it. But
well, you
I mean,
you can
it's
use
gonna
it for
take
other
a while.
Components too, which
you can't,
is nice.
You can't cut rings out of it, and so, but it's like you're putting the cost up front, and then it's on the back end, it's gonna be a kind of a better deal.
Yeah. I guess it just kind of depends on what your goals are. But I think even if I was scratch building like a mostly cardboard rocket, I don't know, for some reason in my head, the fiberglass to a paper motor tube or phenolic motor tube is just not allowed. I'm like, oh, you can't do that. Even though you can, it's perfectly fine.
I think fiberglass to phenolic feels better in my head than fiberglass to paper.
Well, that's just because you like PML kids, and that's true. What they did. Yeah. Either way is probably fine, but we both just have a weird disconnect where it's like, well, that's not allowed because that's not what we're used to. Matt, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I was kind of thinking the same thing. It just seems like the fins would survive a paper rocket, but that's not a bad thing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of true of plywood too, though. I mean, my iris fin has all of the fillets still attached to it, and it just kind of peeled away the cardboard
true.
Off.
Yeah, it's pretty rigid. Yeah, I guess maybe is it more of a weight savings with the composite?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, because you and aerodynamically, it's advantageous. Because you can go way thinner.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, depending on the thickness, right?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, assuming you choose the like for a given strength of plywood, you can get away with a thinner piece of G10, but
yeah.
I mean, something that you're comfortable with eighth inch ply on, you could do 16th inch G10 probably pretty safely in most cases. And that, I mean, cutting the fin thickness in half if you're concerned about performance is a pretty extreme change. Get those extra altitudes.
Yeah. So you choose your material, and then you got to figure out how to cut it, right? Well, I guess another option would be if you could still totally scratch build a rocket and have someone else cut your fins.
Yeah, I did that actually when I was, because PML, I don't know if they still do it now, but they used to just have like fin shape A, fin shape B, fin shape C, and you could just
also
order those.
They also had, you could like, had a tool where you could enter the dimensions of the the fin. But you could definitely contact any like kit manufacturer, and most of them will cut you custom fins for some sort of fee. I don't know.
Right.
You think they
they'll do things if you pay them, I've found.
Wow.
But that's definitely not the most affordable way. But if you're not planning on scratch building a lot of rockets and you just have this one design that it's really killing you to build, that's definitely not a bad option. But if you want to make your own fins and do some heavy scratch building, you got to cut it yourself. So you got a few, we got a few options. The Dremel, which I'm not a fan of, but I think Braden, have you cut fins with the Dremel before?
Yeah, definitely. I cut 3/16 G10 with a Dremel and a diamond wheel before. It's fine. It just takes a long time.
I think I just don't have the patience.
Yeah, it's crazy that I do of all of those.
Yeah. And maybe I'm doing it wrong, but don't you kind of have to go in at an angle?
If you don't get a big enough wheel, but the like actual Dremel branded wheel is big enough that you can, it does still get a little bit cumbersome, but I think I've always
I've always like, just had other options.
Yeah. At this point, I wouldn't recommend it. If it's all you got, then that's fine. But the diamond cutoff wheel from Dremel is like $28 or something like that. And, yeah, if you have another option, definitely go with that. So what are the other options?
But the Dremel will work for plywood or composites, so that's an option.
What do you use, Taylor? You use router?
Well, we'll get to that, Matt.
Oh, okay.
Actually, sorry. Let's ask Matt.
The best thing on the list. Calm down. We'll be there in a second.
Let's ask Matt. Matt, if you were scratch building a rocket right now, which you have a project that you want to build this year.
I do, yeah.
What would you use to cut your fins?
I don't know. I think I feel like I'd
steering
probably,
you in.
Yeah. I think, I think it would have to be Dremel. I mean, part of me was thinking, I was getting real silly and thinking like, oh yeah, I'll use my circular saw. But that's way too thick.
There is one thing I'm curious about. I've found some diamond or like carbide router bits for the Dremel. Mm-hmm. They're like 16th inch diameter, but they're super hard. I'm like, that could actually be something.
Yeah.
Certain thickness.
There's like a jig, you know, there's a jig that you could put that in. And
yeah, they actually have like a router shield.
I have one. The problem is it's good. It's like it'll really jump around on you.
It catches an edge and just zips. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty uncontrollable. I mean, if you go really slow, you can, but it's not going to be it'll be a pretty rough cut. And so you could do a real rough cut with it and then sand the edge, but. Okay, next on the list we have what was teenage me, I was gonna say teenage me's favorite, but that sounds weird. My favorite saw as a teenager, how about that? Sentence structure, everyone.
There you go.
Jigsaw.
Yeah.
You can and just freehand talking with the jigsaw.
We're talking the tool.
What's the more proper name for a jigsaw?
An upsy downy saw?
Reciprocating saw.
I was going to say reciprocating. That's a
saw. No, those are the long ones.
Yeah.
For like tree branches.
My grandpa used to say saber saw.
Yeah. I think heard
that's
that.
That's an old school
too.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have not heard that.
Anyway, obviously, jigsaws, you know, it's a nimble guy, so you gotta be careful with it, but it's a pretty safe saw to use.
Yeah, I'll still bust mine out every once in a while. That's the thing, too, is like you gotta use the right blade, otherwise you're gonna have a real bad time.
Yeah, I would say for wood, you need a lot of teeth, the fine finish blade.
What if you got a bandsaw nice and handy Is that going to
well,
work?
Matt, that is next on the list.
He's just trying to push you because you've been on the fins for like 9 minutes. He's like, this is going bad. Matt's the producer now.
Okay, wait. Yeah,
right. So I will say with the jigsaw, you can use it to cut composites too. And I actually was doing that until like this year, which arguably is way more controllable than how I'm doing it now. So I may go back to it, but you just get a diamond blade for the, I think it's carbine. A diamond blade.
Yeah.
It's like an abrasive blade, but yeah, it cuts like butter through it. I mean, it works super good. Anyway, moving on. That is a great option and pretty affordable. You can get a jigsaw for what, like $30 from Harbor Freight?
Yeah,
maybe?
Something like that. Yeah. I even think like the Ryobi ones are like $30 or $40.
Yeah, blades are like $10 for five. Yeah. Or if you get the diamond blade, it's probably like $12 for one. But so that's a good option. Matt, next on the list is a bandsaw, which is like a jigsaw wearing a suit. Almost.
For sure.
How did you come up with that? Jigsaw wearing a suit?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of the same idea, right? I mean, except the blade's a band, but it's like fancy.
I guess so. Yeah.
It's got a table built into it.
Yeah.
Square cuts.
That's a good. Yeah.
I've always wanted a bandsaw. So that's in the dream shop, like we've talked about. But
yeah. Big freestanding one with like a 15 inch opening.
Taylor, what if you only have a skill saw? Could you use that?
Oh, conveniently, next on the list is the skill saw.
No, it's not. No way.
It legitimately is. It says skill saw LOL.
Yeah, I did see
Are you
that.
Serious?
Yeah, wow. Elaborate a little bit on that for us, Taylor, because my recent solution is equally or maybe more chaotic, and I love it. So go off.
Well, so this, for anyone that's not unaware, skill saw is sort of like the brand name, like saying Kleenex for a circular saw. I think saying, in the trades, everyone says skill saw because circular saw sounds very shop class. But this came about when we built the 12-inch Punisher because we didn't really have a way to cut a 12-inch tube. And I was like, what if I just made a nice line around it and just carefully cut it with a skill saw?
I had no idea.
And I did it, and it worked way too well. And
he was so excited about it, too. He's like, dude, look how good this is.
How did you get that clean
like
of
barely,
a cut?
I thought it might be like the worst, because I've cut small tubes other ways and had like just
really
disasters.
Crooked.
Yeah.
Dude, what? Did you use anything to like align the saw to the tube? Or?
That's freehand.
Whoa.
But I will put an asterisk next to it because like you need to be pretty good with the skill saw. It can get out of hand really darn fast.
Yeah, not everybody can handle it.
But some
folks just got it,
I say that because I messed up a tube not too long ago.
Oh, I see.
I was able to fix it. I was able to fix it, but it's definitely like,
I'm really cut from that fabric,
I just put a disclaimer because I don't want someone to like, they don't have any tools and they're like, that sounds like a good option. Just completely destroy the end of a tube.
Skill saw is pretty big, right?
Well, like those little battery ones we have aren't. Six inch.
I'm thinking
Postcard has one.
Yeah,
I'm thinking of the scary
one. But a full
one.
Size
scary,
one is a seven and a quarter, and that would be a little gnarlier. I don't think I would want to use that. Yeah, just because it's heavy, not really because it's like the size. But
yeah.
Post-Tarts is like the size has been discontinued.
Yeah,
so I couldn't find blades anywhere. So
is it a six and a half?
It's six like, and three quarter or something weird.
Yeah,
you could put a six and a half inch blade in it.
Yeah, well. You could, or you could do what I did, which was get a diamond cutoff wheel for my angle grinder, and that is how I cut my fins for my minimum diameter and how I cut the tube, which works really good, but I think it's really just because the shape of the fins required three straight lines to be cut. If you got a little more advanced than that, it could be a problem.
The blade I've been using is a it's like a metal saw blade, right? It's like a Diablo blade, but it's has it like a diamond abrasive diamond blade, I think.
Yeah.
It was like $20.
Yeah, the one I got was actually pretty cheap. I want to say it was like $9 for a standard 4.5 angle grinder diamond wheel. And I have to say, for cutting tubes, that's my go-to now for fiberglass. It was so nice.
Damn, join the club.
Yeah, we just right through it. I was like, dang,
it's so nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, you just got to like, don't get too greedy with it.
Yeah. What is an angle grinder, but basically also a small circular saw when you get down to
or
it? You know?
Or just like more freestyle with it, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A big Dremel, yeah, that's a good point, Possfire. Yeah. That is kind of more aligned, which might explain why I loved it so much.
But yeah, if you're not cutting composites, you can just use a fine tooth, like finish wood blade for phenolic and whatever, and it cuts quite nice also.
All right, well, nice. Do we want to kind of wrap up fins here?
What about beveling fins?
Yeah, that's we'll just keep it moving on that. Okay, so how do you bevel fins?
Well, if they're plywood, I've been known to just freestyle it on the belt sander.
Yeah.
But nowadays, I have like a 15-degree router bit for a router table. And so if I'm doing, like, I don't know, for quarter inch and under, I'll freehand it. But for the 3/8 and above, I like the router table.
Yeah, I was going to say, smaller stuff, that's not going to do great.
Yeah.
You could have problems.
The big fins, it's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for my minimum diameter, again, also just freestyled the bevels, and they came out pretty good, but I also did cut enough fins for two of them because I kept ruining them. But it's because I was getting too greedy with it. I was like, I just want a little bit more. Let's get this down.
Yeah.
And then it always runs away. Was that?
What did you use? Use the router bit too?
No, it was I bought a big belt sander.
Oh, okay.
Like he has the stand one. The stand one.
Oh, nice.
Worth it. It's because my $20 Walmart one lasted like 7 years, and I used it every time I touched a rocket. So Adam Savage's tool principle is to buy the cheapest version of it that you can find and see if you really need it, and then you can upgrade when you're done with that one. So I went from a $20 band or belt sander to $300 to come up as real. Nice. I figured if I divide that over the like 7 years that I used that last one, and it lasts a minimum of 7 years, then that's a good investment right there.
I was at Harbor. Yeah. I was at Harbor Freight the other day, and I was looking at the 15-inch disc, like it's the disc.
Yeah,
that almost seems better. But there's certain instances where the big long one would be helpful.
It's so nice, especially if you keep it laid flat. Like for all the fins, I just like bunched them up and put them against the catch and just, and then they were all just perfectly flat. It was super nice. That fresh 80 grit belt on the big belt sander will take the skin right off your knuckle. Don't ask me how.
So gnarly. Yeah, and it's like the 80 grit on those big like sanding belts and stuff, it's just it's almost more, I mean, it's somehow more,
it feels like 40.
I guess the like the abrasive stuff is just like bigger.
Yeah. It's super gnarly. It'll make your 33 and a half inch tube 33 and a quarter really really fast.
So I've also used a like a jig with a table saw. Don't recommend that unless you want to lose fingers, but it worked.
Yeah, that's scary.
So I would say to use your imagination. And then if you feel like you want more out of it, do some Googling and see what other people have done, because
I want to give a shout out, honestly, to the people that don't have access to these power tools too, because that was me when I first started plotting my first minimum diameter rocket when I was like 16. I cut, well, actually my buddy Alex cut fins for me, but he sent them to me unbeveled. A really good way to do this, it's time consuming, but if you take a sanding block and just like put the fin perfectly flush with the end of a table, you can kind of just rock it at a 45 degree angle and just go back and forth along, like using the table, the edge of the table as a guide with the sanding block. And I actually got them beveled out pretty nicely. So if you don't have a belt sander, like that, for a long time, Dremel was like the number one thing I would recommend people buy when they get into rocketry and they ask what tool they should have, which we should do a whole episode on rocketry tool recommendations, like a whole starter set for your scratch building rocket shop. But yeah, it's the belt sander is truly a godsend in almost every step of building a rocket.
Yeah.
But working without one isn't impossible. Let's get a round
working
of applause
without a
for
Dremel.
Our...
If you don't have a belt sander or a Dremel, well, you can still do it, but man, it's really gonna, your hands are gonna hurt.
It's daunting.
I do it with sandpaper and just sanding the crap out of it.
Bevel your fins?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it works.
It took a long time, but
I mean, if you just want a rounded edge on plywood, you can do some work with like some 80 grit.
Yeah.
But like I've sanded quite a few fins by hand, like fiberglass fins for my minimum diameter rockets. Cause I have a jig, but I don't have anything good to use the jig with. So I just sort of use a like sticky sandpaper on like a block and then stick the fin on the jig that holds it at the, you know, 10 degree angle or whatever. And then I just kind of rub them together until I get the bevel I want.
Okay. So if we were going to say, best way to cut and bevel fins, what's everybody taking? We'll say, well,
bet on a budget or
I guess I don't know, maybe this isn't important to have. I guess we can just kind of consider that we're weighing out all the options here, but
I mean, I would say just overall middle of I or not overall but like the best compromise probably jigsaw.
Yeah, and that is like, that's one that's super accessible, and like the angle grinder, you can get an angle grinder from Harbor Freight for like $15 and they're awesome, but it's a little chaotic, and it can run away just like a Dremel can.
Absolutely zero skills and successfully use a jigsaw without hurting yourself.
Yeah, there's one thing you did put in the notes that I think is just kind of a good rule of thumb, whether or not you have a belt sander too, is to cut outside your line that you draw. If you have the extra material, the way I did my 3-inch fins was I cut pieces of G10 exactly to the size that I needed and cut a 45. So I didn't have room on the middle piece that became the leading edge of each fin. So I was really careful with that, but everything else, yeah, I just cut it, especially with the new belt sander, and just like flattened it all out. But definitely err on the side of cutting outside the line, cutting oversized and sand it down. It is tiresome if you're doing it with just sandpaper and your hands, but it's not impossible.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then of course, you know, if you happen to have a CNC machine, that's
yeah.
That's going to be your best option.
if you have a CNC, we're about to talk about centering rings and bulk plates, so you can probably just skip the next 10, 15 minutes as well. Because,
there's not too much to talk about with the centering rings and bulk plates.
Hold on, let me get the transition. Okay, centering rings and bulk plates.
The way I used to do, well, before, when I was really little, my dad used to do it for me, but then that's what I did for most of my teenage years, is you draw it out, usually by, like, I would trace a coupler or whatever, and then, like, find the center and then trace my motor tube on there. Mm-hmm. Or use a compass, but that usually result, you know, that led to sadness when you got it wrong.
Yeah.
yeah. But just used a jigsaw and cut outside the line and then cleaned it up on a belt sander. And it works pretty well, but there is some like fill in the gaps with epoxy type of thing.
Dude, you really need to check your belt sander privilege. My God.
What do you mean?
You're really pushing the belt sander. Not everyone has one, my friend. Just
well, you could clean up with a Dremel.
Thank you. Can you just say clean up the edges? Clean it up with a Dremel. Like, oh, you don't have this power tool? Well, you must have this one. My God, Taylor.
Well, you could also clean it up with just a piece of sandpaper by hand. If you Thank have a you. Lot of time.
I just want the people that are sanding everything by hand to feel seen. All right?
That's me.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, go on.
If you have a drill press, if you have a drill press, you can use like Forstner bits and maybe the right size hole saw, but you know, hopefully you have a good hole saw set with like every size.
Yeah, and that actually, the Forstner bit thing, like if you do have those and a Dremel, makes it a world of difference in terms of making things work, because you really just need them to be round and centered enough to get away with it. Like, you can be pretty close, and cutting the outside circle and cleaning it up is not really a big problem, but like properly centering and cutting the middle hole or drilling it out for your motor tube is kind of where it becomes a little bit of a problem. But if you have a close enough Forstner bit or a hole saw, and then just a Dremel with a sanding drum on it, it's like a 5-minute operation with plywood.
The nice thing about Forstner bits is you can get them in really precise sizes. Like,
yeah, some like to 8ths.
If you had a nice set of them, like you can get them in 16ths, so you can pretty much cut whatever size hole you need. Obviously, a Forstner bit works better in a drill press, but you can clamp it and use it in a regular drill too.
Yeah. Speaking while we're on the drill press thing, something that you should never use without a drill press, and honestly, probably just never use. Taylor has
the fly cutter. Here.
I hate ever bringing this up when I'm talking about how you can cut centering rings, because I never feel good about giving anybody the recommendation to touch one of these finger removers. But
Matt, do you know what a fly cutter is?
I'm looking it up. Yeah. Dude,
it's okay. Like a razor blade of death that you attach to a drill press. It's such a bad call. I could see it, like, if you were cutting like Delrin or something really soft, it's a little less frightening. But
just having it in the drill press is kind of terrifying.
Yeah, dude, it's like you need like a ballistic shield around the drill press if you're gonna use one of these things.
Yeah, you definitely need the big full face shield.
Yeah, one that goes all the way down your neck. You need like a hockey goalie throat guard. Wow. Dude, this, I mean, you can use them, but my God, please don't.
There's so many better options.
Yes. Speaking of a better option, do you have any for us, Taylor?
Oh, well, it's what me and Braden, wait, you have one too?
Oh yeah, I grew up on this. It was a life-changing operation when I finally got one.
Yeah. The Jasper jig with the plunge router.
I should say it was a life-changing operation after I got one, broke one, got really sad about it, and then found out that Amazon would exchange it for me because it broke so fast. I did was put it on the router and set it down and just snapped in half. So they sent me a new one. So shout out Amazon. Don't shout out Jeff Bezos, though.
No.
Don't shout out Amazon.
What's funny is I, as a like carpenter, didn't have one until 2 years ago when we built the Punisher and I needed to cut a ton of half inch rings. And then
No. You'd never used one before?
But keep in mind, remember, I wasn't building that many rockets.
Oh, that's true.
But since
I couldn't afford to fly
scratched
them, so I would just save money and buy a huge sheet of plywood and go to town.
And so, I would build a rocket so rarely that, and especially a scratch-built one, I would just cut it with the old jigsaw method. But now that I have the tools at my disposal, I'm cutting stuff left and right. So it's a circle cutting jig for a plunge router. And basically it has a little pin. You drill the center hole and it has a little pin that you put, you find the correct hole that for the radius or the diameter or whatever.
Radius.
Is it the radius?
It'd be the radius.
I think diameter is marked.
I think it's marked as the diameter. So
I think
Well, I mean, because you are finding the radius, but they have like a cheat sheet for the diameter. Anyway.
You're thinking geometrically.
he is the actual engineer here. So
that's all I got though. That's all you got.
He graduated college and he's really stunned on us with it.
once again, if you have a CNC machine,
forget about it.
Just do that. Like, don't
I have to say, the Jasper jig is how much? Like $50, $40?
Yeah.
You might as well spend the extra $1,200 and just get the CNC, you know?
Yeah.
Especially if you don't have a plunge router, because that's going to be another $50, $60 at Harbor Freight.
Now,
I bought
one
used out of a really sketchy like mobile home park in Houston, Texas when we lived there. That's how I got my router. It's still the same one I have, too. So that thing's kicking.
Awesome. What's funny is I already had a router that would work. So I just literally just needed the jig.
You just needed someone to push you into building a 12-inch Punisher. Actually, have you used a Jasper jig?
I haven't, no.
Dude, we got to make a video of your first experience with it. It is, it's enlightening.
The only downside of the router is it's really loud and hurts your ears. And you got to respect it because it can hurt you. But
yeah, any stories about that, Taylor?
No.
Was it the Argus or the Punisher?
I don't know. I think it was the Arcus because I think Postart was there. Because I was like, this is how you don't do it. And then it caught.
Holding
it. I didn't hurt
upside
me, though.
Down.
I was just being really not careful. Oh, I still, upside down still the play for me, by the way.
You hold the plunge router upside down and push down and spin the wood on it, which is just the wrong way to do it. And it is frightening.
For the really small holes.
It's still frightening.
I don't want to recommend it though, because it is admittedly dangerous. But
yeah, just put it face down.
I think it's easier. Yeah,
spin the router. It's use it as designed. All right, follow the instructions that come with the thing, and then Taylor doesn't have to get sued.
That's right. Don't do what I do.
Do as he says, not as he does.
All right, so. Cutting body tubes, we kind of already went over that. Me and Braden like to use a skill saw currently with a diamond blade.
Well, I'm using the angle grinder, but yeah, same thing.
Okay. And then after you do your rough cut, I don't know what you do, but I like to take a full sheet of 80 grit and just spin the tube on the workbench until it has a nice smooth finish.
I want to applaud you for making the people that don't have belt sanders feel seen once again, because that is now my new favorite way to do it.
Dude,
it was so nice with the big one.
With what? Oh, with the belt sander?
Yeah, my 3-inch tube, I just put it against the little stopper. Oh, I used the disc.
How do you hold it stare? Or how do you hold it square?
I don't know. I'm cut from that fabric, I guess. I just kind of eyeballed it, but it, like, when I put the nose cone on, I was like, oh my god, it's like perfect. So I did shave a little extra.
Just built different.
I built different. Yeah. a belt sander build different.
So I guess the important thing for that method and a couple of these others is to make a good line to follow. So I like to use a piece of paper.
Yeah,
and same. You sort of just line it up and then tape it.
Dude, 8.5 by 11 sheets like printer paper are cut so square and nice that they make amazing straight edges.
Yeah. And what's funny is even like on the Arcus and the Punisher, I just taped multiple pieces of paper together.
Yeah, that's what lines. I do too. Yeah. I did that like on my big Iris to measure out where the fin slots went and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did that for
also,
but, we did yeah. that for the Arcus.
Yeah.
So I'm going to recommend that method. If you're cutting a paper tube, an X-Acto knife will certainly work, although it's pretty slow.
You know what, though? There, for some reason, that is another one of those things I shouldn't have patience for, but it's just like super zen to me. To just like cut a paper tube with a fresh X-Acto blade is so satisfying in how well it works.
I think I'm just traumatized because every time I did that as a kid, somehow I never had a sharp enough blade and I was trying to do it anyway.
Oh, and it would jump? It hit your fingers?
Well, I cut my fingers all the time.
Yeah.
Just gnarly cuts. But
yeah. I have stitches from the X-Acto knife blade in this finger.
I should have had stitches multiple times, but I would just wrap it up. But sometimes cutting multiple fingers at once, just some
damn,
top
the combo. That yeah. is impressive.
Doing one of these where you can just like have your fingers in a horrible position and then it slips and you just like
yeah,
go right
yeah,
in.
Exactly.
Anyway, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. While we're here, I want to make the people with 3D printers feel seen. If you have a 3D printer that you can 3D print a cutting guide with, looks super sick. I haven't actually done it, but people are like 3D printing them with just small pieces on like the 180 degree marks, and then it's just like the width of an X-Actoly knife blade, and you just run it through this 3D printed jig and
whoa,
pull it off and then cut the extra tiny little tabs off, and Bob That's is nice. In fact your uncle, and it's
wow.
crazy.
No, besides cutting my fingers, I would kind of just like leave the roughest jagged edge tube
yeah
cut yeah just real bad. So but I hear it works quite nicely if you have a nice fresh blade in there.
Yeah, you know what actually really taught me to like really take my time and get those cuts nice? The Pemtec King Kraken, because you have to cut
I
those
bet.
fins. That shape was
and that's exactly
daunting.
Why I well that's not the only reason, but I was like nope, that kit's yeah. not happening.
I
same
had
with a lot
that
of those
kit
Fliss
for
kits
yeah. I had the King Kraken for a long time before I built it because I was really convinced I was going to ruin it. And the extra $12 for a new 3-inch body tube was an unsurmountable barrier to me as a teenager. So,
one of my favorite methods of cutting tubes for since I was a teenager and had access, a miter saw. It just works.
Yeah, pretty solid, has a dependable way
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
If you're cutting, it's, you know, unless you have a saw set up specifically for it, like, say, Tim in his shop, if you're cutting glass tubes, it's kind of inconvenient to get a fancy blade and swap it over.
Right.
A lot yeah. of times I would use the, like, metal cutoff blades.
Metal blades work good with fiberglass. It's just is
yeah.
A,
they just
kind of
sometimes you'd get they sometimes they'd get like a vibration. I'm talking like the abrasive ones.
Mm. Like we're not picking up good vibrations either.
but it does work. So,
yeah, and I'm gonna throw one in that I don't see on your list. But it is. The bandsaw making a return, but the horizontal bandsaw that you
oh,
use
yeah.
the screw
dude,
and let gravity do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
My God, it's so nice.
Those
I cut a tube
so
with one
big.
Once. Yeah. Well, they make pretty, like Harbor Freight has one that does up to like 6 inches. It's not that large. But yeah, I do want the huge one that you can cut like 18 inch tubes with. It's sick.
Oh my God.
Nigel the Rocket Cat, everybody, says visit rocketvlogs.com.
He's really on one.
Just he wants to talk.
Jumping up here, knocking everything over.
Did you spill your diet DDP?
Luckily, no. The tape measure went flying off.
Thank God. The tape measure be replaced.
He's mad we're not recording this on our usual day.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, probably.
We got merch to move, and we're a day late already.
Yeah.
You can use a Dremel. That sounds not fun, but
yeah, it sucks. Honest, that actually, usually you do kind of need to hit it with a little bit of an angle.
I used to do it a lot now that I think about it, but it was for like motor tubes and stuff, like the smaller stuff. Yeah. It does work pretty well for that, but I don't want to cut like a 7.5-inch tube with a Dremel. That sounds not fun.
Yeah, it's not.
I don't know. I've heard of like people using a hacksaw. That's gonna, if you really take your time and follow your line, it can work, but not for me. I don't.
Well, that would be another really good use case for the 3D printed cut guide too.
Oh yeah.
If you have a blade guide, then that's go for it. You got it. Have you put your 3D printer together yet?
I was gonna ask that.
My God, dude.
I know.
I'm gonna 3D print you some instructions.
You don't have to 3D print them. You can just print them.
Oh yeah, you're right.
I forgot
about real printers. That's for a second.
Yeah, 2D printing.
It's like, whoops, a video where you're printing something and then you accidentally choose the wrong printer and it spits out
a sheet of paper.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, we talked about the skill saw. I've seen people make a jig so you can cut absolutely gigantic tubes on a table saw.
Yeah, and you kind of just roll it.
Yeah.
Looks kind of nice.
But now that I know about the skill saw, there's no reason for me to ever want to do that.
That's fair. You've been enlightened.
Yeah. I guess if it was a big enough tube and we didn't have enough, like a big enough piece of sandpaper to clean up. But I guess if it was a tube that big, we would just be like using the belt sander on the or the palm sander on the edge of the tube.
Yeah.
So I guess I don't recommend the table saw anymore.
It's growth, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh my God.
If you love table saws, there's, you know, the hobbyist woodworker loves a table saw for everything. So I guess
I like a good table saw.
Yeah.
I've seen too many people lose their fingers, like not firsthand, but
it's because they don't respect the table saws.
Yeah.
I'm wet and wild. Like, I could get a little loose with it and might be tipless Tom after that.
I feel like respect should be, you know, the disclaimer throughout all of these tools we're talking about.
Yeah. You can disrespect a jigsaw all day long and it will let you, it'll just take it.
Yeah. RESPECT, as our friend Aretha Franklin would say. Let's give a shout out to Aretha Franklin. Rest in power.
Thank you. That's right.
All right. Moving on. Slotting body tubes. That was always a nightmare for me as a teenager, but I can handle it now. So you got to mark the tube, right? Like we talked about, doing the paper method and then doing the math to figure out the proper spacing, whether you want 3 fins or 4 fins or 5, 6, 7, whatever. And then just mark it out and then use your whatever thin thickness. Whatever your fin thickness is, just account for that. And then draw some lines the appropriate length where you want the slots to be, and then cut them out and profit, right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, not the profit part in most cases, I'll say, but you got everything else.
So in order to cut them out, if it's a paper tube, the X-Acto knife, solid option, or the Dremel.
Dremel, it's so easy to start burning the tube and get some funky stuff going on, though. Shane's a big proponent of the snap-away knives, right, Shane?
Yeah. Yeah, they're really nice.
The ones that are like $2 for $1 Harbor Freight.
You just break them.
Yeah, those always made me angry.
He loves them.
I love
them. Is it like a box knife kind of thing?
Yeah, sort of.
It's
plastic
like the
ones.
Skinny, like long blades.
And just like once it's dull, you just break it and then you got fresh blade again.
I think it's like because when I was a kid, I had some of those that were like so crappy that the blade would not stay out.
Oh, yeah. See, one thing that too that I've added to my collection recently is like the fold-out knife that uses a regular razor blade. And they can go dull pretty fast, but like for cutting cardboard and stuff, it's super nice because those are super sharp. So you can really be pretty precise with them. Yeah. I think it was like $8 at Home Depot, and it came with like 5 extra blades too.
I use as a construction guy, I'm a fan of like the Stanley utility knife.
Oh, yeah.
The
big, thick boy.
Yeah, but the go to Lowe's and get the Irwin blades. They're the best utility knife blades, in my opinion. Like the other, like a Stanley blade, like it or DeWalt goes dull instantly.
Shout out Irwin.
But you can only get Irwin stuff at Lowe's, so
that's right, the only shout out Lowe's.
Don't give him too much though. I'm a Depot guy.
Lowe's has the Quikrete tubes that fit 7.5-inch nose cones.
Okay, well, we have our reasons to go to Lowe's. Doesn't mean you should all the time.
What about Matt? Matt's a Menards guy, I feel.
No, he's a Home Depot fan, boy. Homie. He's a Home Depot homie.
They have a banger of a theme song.
If Matt lived near Menards, he would go all the time.
I love Menards, but I think it's mostly because we don't have them.
Yeah, we don't get the privilege. People,
now that there's one in Kansas City, everyone's just like...
They're Maynard.
Annoyingly into it, like... You could get your stacks there too.
Oh no. Dude, I'm a Home Depot boy.
I remember though, I think Matt went with me when we were, it was the 4th of July, I was getting batteries and I was like, dude, you get like ice cream and popcorn and a few 2x4s while we're here. This place rips. They have a whole like grocery store in there. Fridge, a sink, whatever you want.
We went
everything and the kitchen sink, quite frankly.
Yeah. You and I went to buy primer.
Oh yeah,
brush on primer.
And you know what? Oh. They had it. So shout out Menards, dude.
Oh my god. Get this man away from the soundboard.
Yeah. So lately I've been cutting my fin slots also with a skill saw.
No way, dude.
Whoa,
what?
Dude. Yeah, dude.
He's a professional.
It rips. It's so fast.
That. He's a professional. Are you like doing 45s at the end for the
what?
How are you cutting like the width of the fin?
Well, sometimes you got to make two passes.
Yeah.
So I draw the actual thickness of the fin, right? And then you just follow the line.
And what size?
What about the ends?
What do you mean the end? Oh, so after you cut that part, then you have to use a Dremel to kind of.
What size of blade? What size of blades on the skill saw?
The one we have, 6.5.
Oh, that makes sense. Like for the 12 and 9-inch rockets, did you do it for the sumo? Well,
yeah. So that's I was like, how should I cut these fin slots when I was building the smaller rock? Like I even did it on the 4-inch sumo.
Oh, I was about to say I think 7.5 is kind of the cutoff, but I guess not.
So.
Huh?
If you a blade thickness is just around 1/8 inch, so
you just line it up and it's a quarter.
I
you
just
go
made
two passes.
Yeah, I just kind of did one, and then like you can finesse the. It's not exact, so you sort of use the Dremel to finesse the open up the slot a little bit. You could also just use a piece of sandpaper, like wrapped in something, and
Shout out to the people who don't have belt sanders. Feel seen. I have to say the skill saw for fin slots sounds ferociously unappealing.
I'm here for it.
That's crazy, dude. Taylor's dude, just like, look at with the 2-inch one, if you just line it up right, you do both sides at once. Boom, it's right through the tube. It's perfect 180 degrees.
I mean, wicked. It sounded crazy until you tried it, and then, dude, no going back. It's
I awesome. For sure would mess it up.
Can you definitely. Just use like just have Postart do it for you? He's all in.
Yeah, that's
could
true.
Could you use a paddle bit and just you know paddle bit your way down the?
Oh my god! No, actually though, tell me back to the Dremel like router attachment. That this is a very applicable use case.
Well, if you made a jig.
No, if you use a tiny little bit, you can freehand it. Mm.
Okay, try it and report back like to
a
me.
Rose, like a rose.
How can you be down with that, but not a skill saw?
Because it sounds easier.
It's because he doesn't know how ferocious that router bit is.
Nah, I got it. I'm built from that fabric.
It's gonna catch and try to rip it out of your hand.
I'm built from that fabric.
Do a video, and then the next time you build a rocket, just do it and record it.
You're gonna be built from 9.5
how
fingers
I lost
after
my
that.
Finger. Yeah. Wow. All right, well, the Dremel with the diamond cut off wheel is really good for fin slots. How I cut the fin slots on my 7.5-inch Iris, and as these guys will lead you to believe, the fin slots were 18 feet long, so that doesn't test how good it is.
The Dremel is a more responsible, reasonable way to do it.
And I have to say, that was the first time I bought and used the Dremel diamond wheel, and I still used that particular diamond wheel until like 3 years ago. I built that rocket when I was 17. That thing was just kept going. It was an Energizer bunny of cutoff wheels.
Wow.
If you want to get crazy with it, this is if I had a full size shop where I could have just jigs and stuff everywhere, I would do this. So either a table saw or a router, but basically you make a jig that is adjustable that can like hold the tube in one spot
like a miter box
and then like for a router it's like mounted on top with and it can slide and so you just kind of drop it in and makes a perfectly straight slot and
I think
just choose the router bit based on your fin thickness.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what some manufacturers do. Some of them might confuse 3/8 with 5/8 on your Honest John fin slots and make them way, way, way too big. But I think Jerry O'Sullivan has pictures of something like that where he used like 10/10 rails and it just like the router just slides up it and it looks really nice. But taking the time to build a tool to use the tool that I want to use is like where I started getting lost. I'm like, I don't know, man, that's a little... so much. If somebody else built it for me, maybe. Yeah. Like a nose cone making jig. If somebody built that, I would love to use it.
For a very specific nose cone.
Yeah.
One size fits one.
You know what's funny about the nose cone jig that I made is I'm like, this is going to be dumb because we're only going to need to use it once. And then look.
Surprise.
We get to use it again.
Guess what?
Jeez.
All right. I'm going to speed run us to the next topic because I want to give a shout out to Tony Alkisser. Taylor has written down rolling your own tubes. This is where we're starting to get in depth on the scratch build stuff.
This is the seriously scratch build stuff
but
here.
Posthider and I are about to dive into this because I have a ton of fiberglass and now have saved a couple motor cases and stuff for doing this. And I have AMWL 1400 that I want to fly minimum diameter. So we're going to make our own tubes. But Tony Alkisser built a rocket, probably 10 or 12 years ago now, called Tough Enough. And he just like made awesome videos about how he makes the tubes. And he just took his 9815 360 case, wrapped it in Mylar from Tap Plastics, and then someone's calling me. wrapped it in Mylar from Tap Plastics and then rolled his tube around it and boom, just had a perfect situation.
Yeah, that's how I used that video to make my first successful tube, really the first real try. But the tube for my minimum diameter 3-inch rocket I built in 2014, it just worked, and I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah,
but
it was super cool.
Keep watching the video, and he goes through everything you need to know.
That whole series was super cool, and then like once he was done with it, because he, which is also on the list, is making your own nose cones. He made a fiberglass mold from a plastic nose cone, and then
he makes it
use
look
that
easy.
Mold. Yeah, he really does,
and it's not.
And then he just flew it on a minimum diameter end, and just it was perfect.
Wow,
that's Tony. Just kind of has this way of like. Everything he does looks really simple, and you think that you could just do it, but it's kind of just a Tony thing to just be able to pull that off for no reason. So the custom nose cones, a lot of people now are doing like the 3D printed mold plug, and then you just like put a condom on it and then use sleeves. And Thomas Buska flew the Busk. Shout out the Busk. He flew a L2100 Propellant X like research load to like Mach 3.6 with a nose cone that he made like that with just a machined nose tip. And like people are just all these like college people at FAR are just like belting out these cloth tube nose cones and sending them to Valhalla, and it's all just going perfectly fine for some reason. It's chaos out here.
I mean, the fact that it's made from one, like using a sock, like one piece of glass.
Yeah.
So it's not as likely to delaminate, I guess.
Right. But it's definitely doable if you want to venture down that path. I don't think any of us really have, right? You've done tubes, Taylor, but.
I mean, it's on the list, but it really has to be something I can't buy a nose cone for.
Right. Yeah, because
I have to have a reason to do it.
I rolled a 3-inch tube that was like a weird size because I just used a piece of something that I had when I was younger. So I would have had to make a nose cone for that. Instead, I just never finished the rocket.
I should try to make Matt a better nose cone for his rocket.
What do you mean? It's perfect.
Try the sleeve thing.
I think you should put together your 3D printer and then just 3D print.
That's what I'm saying.
What he's saying.
Yeah, he's a 3D.
Oh, but no, he's builds, saying we'll make a mold. Glass nose cone for it.
Well, make a plug. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah.
And then you can that rocket will weigh literally half as much as it does now.
The I-200s will be spicy again.
Yeah, they'll hit different. All right, you want to elaborate? Oh, go ahead.
You could, use a lathe the old school way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, true.
Make a giant foam or balsa nose cone and glass it.
Dude, you remember Sandman?
Yeah.
He used to make the coolest, like, crazy in-depth, like, nose cones and... You make them for pretty much whatever you want. He's like, yeah, you want a pine one so it smells like a pencil? Sure, let's do that. he made Jim Scarpine's 5.5-inch Explorer Aquarius nose cone, which is crazy because it's like two pieces made from foam and then glassed. And yeah, that dude was an animal, but it's definitely doable.
Yeah, you'd be like, this one's made out of ash.
Yeah. And another great way to do a custom nose cone is go watch our Arcus video and look at the jig that Taylor built because it worked unbelievably well.
There needs to be some revisions because I don't want to say it's the great way to make a nose cone because it broke in half, but
not because of the
shaping
jig.
Part. The shaping part worked well.
Yeah.
The part where you build it around a 1/2-inch piece of all thread is not.
Not the play, right? Yeah, as it turns out, didn't
but
quite
I have
go
a plan
as planned
for to make that work. So,
And do you want to elaborate? You put motor retention as the last
one. We don't need to talk about that. We're over time, so.
Okay, well, you know, just use mirror clips and hardware.
Yeah, go to the hardware store and use your imagination. That's basically what I was going to say.
Aeropacks are beautiful things, and the adapter systems are amazing, but if you're not trying to spend $70, you're not trying to spend 70 bucks, we get it.
Do you remember back when, like, everyone, like, Aeropacks were, like, super, like, not everyone used Aeropacks?
It was, like, too like, bougie. They were considered,
it was, like, kind of expensive. Like,
whoa, I mean, this rocket has an Aeropack on it.
Yeah.
Who can afford
those were,
that?
Those were, like, for rich guys.
Yeah.
But just, like, what people would do, like, using baling wire and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Just getting crazy with it. Like, drilling holes through the aft closure and wiring it in.
Yeah, actually, the tapered 54 CTI closure has holes through it already, or this one had them drilled and added. This was given to me, but people used to, they're like, and then you just take these two screws and then you just wrap five layers of like mechanics wire from O'Reilly in and out of these holes and tighten the screws down and boom, your motor stays in mostly. People, it was the wild west, but washers and machine screws work phenomenal. We haven't done $3,000 worth of hardware out of the Punisher yet.
And it held a bunch of unburned motors. So.
Yeah, that's true.
The main could have opened and it could have just thrown them all out.
It would have been so awesome.
seeing that that N3300 loaded coming just toward the ground.
Yeah,
awesome.
Aww.
That'd be so cool. One last thing. I forgot to mention for centering rings, it works better on a smaller rocket. I don't know if I would try it on a big one, but when I was, an adolescent, we'll say, I would, like, if the motor tube was close to the diameter of the body tube, you can just use a bunch of tape. Just if you just have a full roll of tape laying around, just crank out some tape on there and then just use a bunch of epoxy to put it in and it will work great.
That's all it takes sometimes. But
masking tape preferably.
Yeah. Anyway. I'm a big fan of the aluminum tape as well. Every time I do a minimum diameter rocket where I use it or a rocket where I use it, I'm like, check out my custom aluminum motor retainer. Funny every time. All right, so we're going to move on to the mailbag. We only have one entry here for this week's, which is crazy.
Who is
because
it?
Ryan Emmenegger, shout out to this. He's actually fairly local to us. We see him at launches every once in a while now. But if you are interested in partaking in these mailbag segments, I've now opened it up to free members of Patreon. So if you want to partake in this, and then every once in a while I'm gonna slip you free members a nice little behind the scenes thing, so go check it out. It's patreon.com/rocketvlogs, and from now on all of the mailbag
vlogs
from now on every one of the Patreon mailbag posts will be open to both paid and free members, so everybody's voices can be heard. So I actually just got a notification though, so let's see if it happens to be a new comment on this post. No. Okay. Ryan says it was somebody becoming a free member though. Perfect timing. Both my level one and level two were scratch billet cardboard. Number one, tape the outline of the fin slots and use it as a guide for cutting. That's actually a really good idea that I've never done. I find it's much easier to follow the edge of masking tape than it is any pen or marker line. As for cutting the slots, I use a Dremel with a cutoff wheel and take it slow. You could also use a really sharp knife, but a Dremel is worth the time save. Epoxy can hide any oopsies. I'm a big believer in fillets hiding really ugly fin slots.
Oh, yeah.
Works great.
For sure.
The same can be applied to cutting tubes to length. I find it easier to follow the edge of masking tape than a line. Cutting it little by little around the circumference with a hacksaw works really well. Oh, there you go. A chop saw, if you have one, works great for cutting tubes square. There you go. Were you gonna say something?
Yeah, if you're cutting with an X-Acto knife, doing the tape along on your tube does kind of help.
I do the tape usually on top of the paper, just to hold it in place, and then just get a nice, like, very distinguishable line. On the cheap, AML one cardboard and plywood hardware store, paracord with the bottom third or so a layer of duct tape to protect from injection gases as a shock core. Hardware store, 5-minute epoxy, and eye bolts and quick links. That is kind of the best part about, like, especially with 3D printing now, like, you can build a high power rocket from just a scrap piece of mailing tube that you get for free. Here's a free one for you, actually. Go to sign shops and ask them if they have empty rolls, because a lot of the rolls for vinyl are like perfect 3-inch tubes that will just fit off the shelf nose cones.
And the rest of them will be almost right, but then your case will be really loose inside.
Yeah, so careful with those.
Add a couple wraps of fiberglass on the inside of the bottom of the tube
to make
the
sounds case like fit you better. Have experience just, with that.
Yeah, weird. I don't know.
Interesting. Well, anyway, Ryan's final thing was, I think the Dremel with cutoff wheels and a hacksaw with a sharp blade needed for scratch building, as mentioned above. Yeah, we love to tout the Dremel. It is just, it's amazing for scratch building and just really anything in rocketry. Sometimes you have a ring that doesn't quite fit your motor tube, or the slots aren't quite wide enough in the kit or whatever, or you need to cut something.
There was a few years where I like lived in an apartment and I was still trying, I was trying to build rockets in my apartment and not use a Dremel, or maybe my Dremel was burned up maybe, but I was trying to just do it without it. And man,
those were dark times.
You really realize how much the Dremel helps, because you're just there sanding it by hand and like making no progress, trying to use files and stuff. And it's like, it's something that once you have a Dremel, it's like takes 2 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an amazing thing. And you can get like a knockoff Dremel, although I'd usually just recommend even like the 1-speed corded Dremel is like $25 or $30. Buy all the cheap like bits and stuff you want for it. But every time I've bought like a cheap knockoff rotary tool, it's just never good.
Yeah.
But does anybody have anything else to say about scratch building rockets? Matt Postart, speak your piece.
Peace.
I think I'm all right.
Postart is you're gonna scratch build something, right?
Yeah, I've got a few things coming up.
Oh, he's got a few things.
Yeah, yeah, he's got a 7.5-inch thing. He's got a 54-millimeter thing.
Another 7.5-inch thing.
Two?
Wait, what?
Yeah.
The one that we've been. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
He does have another 7.5-inch thing.
Yeah.
Sheesh, it's going to get crazy in this. We are going to run out of space. So anyway, it's patreon.com/rocketblogs, and we're going to need to rent a bigger house or a shop. But yeah, thank you guys so much for being here. My name is Braden Carlson. You can find me right here on YouTube at Rocket Vlogs, which may very well be where you're watching this right now. But if you're not, you can find me on YouTube at Rocket Vlogs. You can follow me on Instagram at BigB1011. If you happen to have Snapchat, every few months I post on there. So that's also BigB1011.
My name is Taylor, and you can find me on YouTube at The Rocket Channel, and someday I will make another video.
Oh, please, hopefully.
My name is Shane, or Postart. You can find me on YouTube at Postart Propulsions or RocketryPix.com.
My name is Matthew, or Macho Match, and I'm right here.
All right, everybody. It's April 29th. We have to do this.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you. Come on, Taylor. Happy birthday to you.
Wow.
I just thought it would be really funny to do it with all the timing being off.
Oh, that was rough.
But anyway, we are the Anti-Gravity Group in completion once again. Thanks for being here, Macho Match.
Yeah.
This is the Anti-Gravity Group podcast.
Thank you.
And we will see you next time.